boy. 720 WGN, 8 minutes after 6 o'clock. Who else would start a program with the Martian hop? John Landecker. Why would he start a program about Mars and Martian hopping and all that kind of stuff? I'm going to tell you why. Because right now we're going to talk about outer space and telescopes and aliens and all sorts of creatures in the atmosphere. With Rod Pyle from at...
Hi, John.
Hey, man. Thanks so much for being on with us from Ad Astro Magazine. Now, I got to tell you right away, this is not like my normal show, okay? This is prime time here in Chicago. It's 9 minutes after six. So in like 6 minutes or so, I got a break for some very important traffic and weather. Then we'll come back, and then okay. We'll do some more, okay? I just wanted to hip you to that. All right, so...
Yeah, thank you.
You're very welcome. The telescope. Let's start there. The Webb, I believe it's called, the Webb of Telescoping. Tell us about that, because you know
James Webb Space Telescope. So this has had us all on pins and needles for years, and if you're, you know, just reading about it in the press more recently, for months. And the key thing here is this is the big follow-up to Hubble, and Hubble will still be operating, but this is a massive machine that will outdo Hubble in so many ways it's hard to describe. But in brief, the mirror is much larger. It's about 21 feet instead of 8. And this telescope, a little more esoteric, but it operates in infrared. And the Hubble has some infrared capability, but it's very limited. And why do we want to watch things in infrared? Because infrared light, first of all, it doesn't come through the Earth's atmosphere, so you have to be in space to see it. But it's the best way to look at stuff that's really far away. Because as you know, if you remember high school physics, it's kind of hard to think back that far for me, but as stuff in the universe is moving away from us, the light gets redder and redder, so you want to be looking at the red end of the spectrum to be able to see what's going on. So because of that, the key thing about this, two key things. One is we'll be able to see back almost the edge of time, just a couple hundred million years after the Big Bang. So you're really looking at the earliest parts of the universe now.
Wait a minute. Like, you know, wait a minute. This telescope is going to go all the way back to the beginning of time?
Yeah, because you're looking at light that's taken so long to get to us.
Oh, my God.
It's like flying away from Earth and looking back and seeing dinosaurs or protozoa.
That blows my mind.
It really is kind of mind-bending when you think about it. The other thing is it's sophisticated enough, along with a couple of other telescopes that we're setting up in the next couple of years, that between them, they'll be able to directly look at exoplanets and start. So these are planets in other solar systems. And, of course, what we want to know is, you know, how many there are and what are they like and all that. But what we're dying to know is there life there? So if you can identify certain spectra by looking at their atmosphere, by the light coming through their atmosphere, you might be able to see things that tell you that there's some form of life there emitting various gases. And the web will contribute to that. So that's kind of the big story on that.
I'm hung up on this. So I've heard for years, you know, we're on the radio and the signal goes up into the sky and it goes into the atmosphere and it'll go on forever. So, right? So what you're saying is, we are going to, somehow this is going to go back to the very first time that there was any light? Is that it?
Not quite. That's the Big Bang moment. So 200 to 300 million years after that, but still, you know, in the big universal clock, that's like a minute past midnight,
Whoa.
Right?
Yeah.
So you get to see the early stars, you get to see the first galaxies forming. So you're seeing all the stuff we've wondered about for, you know, well over 100 years, and sequentially, as we've gotten better telescopes, bigger telescopes on the ground, some up in space like Hubble, we'll be able to see more and more of this, but this is kind of the big payoff because you're really getting back to those very early moments in relative terms and being able to see what the young universe looked like, which gives us a much better idea of how things played out.
Yeah, this is way beyond my pay grade.
It's a brain bender, you know.
And it's
like
really is.
Lie in bed at night as a kid and think, okay, I'm going to wrap up the universe in a big bag. Oh, what's outside of that? So it's that level of, like, mystery. The other thing, of course, the big story has been how complicated it is, and we can get into that after your break. But I've been calling it a case of outrageous ambition because, by all rights, something should have gone wrong already, and it hasn't. And hats off to the people at Northrop Grumman that built this thing, and NASA for coming up with it. Wasn't cheap, $10 billion bucks, but you know, $10 billion here, $10 billion there. You got a fighter jet or a big space telescope, so pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's unbelievably cool. I want to ask you about when we come back about an article I saw in the New York Times that surprised me in its content, and if it's true, it's wonderful. But if it's wrong, it's just a rumor, I guess he said ineffectively. We're talking to Rod Pyle, senior editor from Ad Astra magazine. We're talking about things in outer space, the new Webb telescope, a rabbit hut, a mystery hut that has been found on the moon by the Chinese rover, and all of that and more. Yes, we're back in outer space, 720 WGN, 17 minutes after 6 o'clock with John Landecker, continuing our discussion with the editor of Ad Astra magazine, Rod Pyle, who really knows his stuff. I mean, it's just incredible. Let me get to this headline that I saw in the New York Times, all right? Telescope helps bring a divided world together. Countries set aside tensions to focus on exploring space. Would you agree with that?
Well, I'm not in any of those other countries today, so I'm not sure how they're perceiving it. But you know, one thing that's great about space exploration in general is that it gets everybody excited. I don't, you know, there are a handful of people that are still griping about, you know, why are we spending money there? We're spending here and so forth. But the truth of it is, you know, when you look at a program, let's just take, for example, the F-35 fighter program. You look at this program that's cost $500 billion and produced a jet that's still got some question marks around it in terms of, you know, its effectiveness and so forth. When you look at NASA's yearly budget of about $22 billion and the returns we get from it, not just, you know, straight science and so forth, but the way it supports the technology base of the country, it gets kids interested in STEM education, and that's good for us. All these spinoffs that we've heard about over the years, from scratchless glass to, I know you're going to say Tang. Tang was around before. But, you know, computing and so forth, modern computing dates back to the space program. So, you know, if you put that aside, it really is kind of uniting. And survey after survey, and I won't go into the boring details, but I did just have a reason to look into a bunch of polls taken over the last 50 years about how people feel about NASA. Mm-hmm. And more recently, and it's, you know, one of the best recognized brands in the world. It's a government entity of the U.S. that has almost no negative connotations. And it's the thing that we do best in this country, other than, you know, commercialism and building weapons and so forth, where everything's made here, yet benefits everybody on the planet, either directly or indirectly. So, yeah, I think I would agree with that. It may be a little strong, but I think what will really make the difference is when the really cool stuff starts coming back once this machine's completely aligned and ready to go. They've got some work left to do. They're 83% of the way to their final orbit, which is about 1 million miles out past lunar orbit.
Wow.
1 million miles from Earth. And they had upwards of 400 critical functions that had to go right or it wasn't going to work.
Now, man, oh man.
Yeah. You know, I'm not an engineer, but you know what it's like when you're doing plumbing or wiring in your house and you mess up one thing and then you got to go backwards to figure out what you did wrong.
You know,
and imagine.
You don't know this guy, but we're going to send Lou Manfredini out to outer space and put all this stuff together. Don't worry about it. That's a local joke.
Well, and the problem is, so with Hubble, you know, we had this problem when it was launched that it was out of focus because a critical test had been skipped.
Yeah.
And so we went up and fixed it with a space shuttle. Well, this thing's so far away, that was a couple hundred miles up, this thing's so far away at 1 million miles, roughly, it's almost impossible to fly out and fix it if something goes wrong. It is something they could probably mount given time, but it'd be very dangerous and very expensive. It's just got to work. And because this isn't just a tube with a couple of solar panels, as you're seeing, it's got, you know, these five layers.
Hey. What was that? Sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
Aliens.
Somebody don't want to hear that. Yeah, sunspot on the signal.
It's got all this even thin foil that's got to unfurl and then be tensioned and separated into five separate layers. And it's got this 18-cell mirror that has to unfold and latch perfectly. And each of those, so you've seen the octagonal mirror pieces, right?
Right.
So that was folded into thirds. The two sides had to fold out and latch. Then the whole thing you know, it's flat at that point, roughly. It has to pull itself with a curvature, and each mirror has six little motors on it that not only align them so they point the light in the right direction, but can actually warp the surface of the mirror for critical focus. So that's how exacting this is. So it makes brain surgery look pretty simple.
Now, I understand that the parts of the apparatus that unfolds, the sections are as thin as a human hair.
Well, so there's two things. That foil, which is the sun shield, because it's got to be kept very cold, is very thin, so you don't want to tear that. But I think where the human hair, quote, comes in is where those mirror cells meet and latch into place, the alignment's critical to about that diameter. Jeez. So it's got to be perfect. And remember, because this is built on Earth, it's never been tested in space. You're doing a lot of guessing, right?
Because
testing all this stuff on Earth with Earth gravity, and you hope it works when it gets up there, but you haven't had a chance to test it in zero-G. So a lot of finger crossing.
We're talking to Rod Pyle, who's the senior editor at Astro Magazine, and we've talked before later in the evening, and I'm just telling you that Rod and I can go on for hours about this, but we won't. Speaking of the international part of this, I have an article here that China discovered a mystery hut that was shaped like a rock on the moon.
Well, so the Chinese space program apparently loves clickbait. And it's interesting because they've had a series of headlines from, you know, gel-like substance found on the moon, which turned out to be some glass formed by a meteorite impact, which is, you know, interesting, but it's not jello. And, you know, bizarre substance and all that. A lot of this stuff gets posted on Facebook and Instagram, which, let's bear in mind, is banned in China, so it's obviously designed for foreign consumption. But they do the same thing internally. So it's a very, let's say it's a very colorful program in terms of public relations. So they spotted a rock that was kind of square, and it started to build up with the story about, oh, we found a mystery hut on the moon, and blah, 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 blah. And immediately, you know, the science community came out and said, well, you know, it's probably a rock because a lot of rocks get thrown around the moon because there's stuff slamming into it all the time. And notably, never U2, this rover, YUTU, is on the far side of the moon where the bombardment has been much heavier over billions of years because it's the part that's facing the outer solar system. The moon always faces the same way, right?
Right.
In terms of facing the Earth. So they drove over to it. It took them, you know, a month and a half, 2 months, about a quarter mile. I finally got up next to it, and it's a rock. I cannot find measurements anywhere, but from looking at the soil next to it and doing some extremely crude math, I think it's between about 18 and 24 inches tall. And it's a rock. You know,
it's
a square rock.
They drove over to it. What does that mean?
Well, it's a rover, right?
Oh, okay.
So they can drive around.
I thought maybe, they jumped into some Chinese car and just took off. So,
not yet.
Nah,
that's
next. Yeah.
But they drove over, it took a close look, and of course, you know, there's a little disappointment in the broader community about, oh, it isn't something exotic. But to make up for that, they said, oh, and this rock looks, and if you've seen it, it looks like a rock. But they said, oh, no, actually, it looks like a rabbit. And there's the myth, Chinese myth of the jade rabbit on the moon that mixes the elixir for the moon princess that keeps her immortal and blah, blah, blah. So the whole story kind of blew up and then calmed down and then sort of warmed up again because they wanted to make it feel warm and fuzzy, I guess.
You know, you made a great point there in this conversation about how social media can be manipulated from outside the United States to get us to believe certain things that come across. Why, certainly, that's absolutely correct. Why in the world wouldn't I believe it? Well, because, as you pointed out, they ban all of that inside China, but they have no problem using it to influence the rest of us. I thought that was a great point. I mean, really, I've never heard that before. And I'll be on the lookout. I think maybe this New York Times reporter got clickbaited, or whatever you call it, saying that the world is going to come together over this Webb telescope and gold mirror. But
well, that would be our clickbait if it was. But you know, I do think that that, again, you know, these big flagship programs that NASA does, and, you know, we haven't been doing a lot other than the space station and human space flight, but mm-hmm. when you talk about the robots, there's something special about being able to go along with them for us, and I think that yes. does make it very compelling for people of all nationalities. Rob, and, you know, the kind of things we're doing.
I gotta cut you off. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
We will hook up again soon. I mean, talk.
Please do.
We'll talk again soon.
Okay.
Rod, bye.
Take care.
Rod, bye.